I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast. Coming up this week, we'll preview the first Lions test against Australia. We'll look ahead to the final of cricket's Champions Trophy as England try to win their first ever global 50-over tournament. We'll look back at a frankly bizarre week at Newcastle United. We'll bring you the draw for Wimbledon and assess British chances at SW19. And Charlie Owens will bring us the details ahead of Royal Ascot's grand finale. But we'll start with rugby, and the British and Irish Lions are set to take on Australia on Saturday morning. I'll go through the lineup with sports broadcaster Jake Robson in just a little while. But first, let's hear from head coach Warren Gatland, who says despite the disappointment of some players missing out on a place in the starting 15, he has a happy and united camp.
We know that there was some disappointment amongst the players, but it was just how the other players, you know, were really ran and congratulated each other. Obviously, a few disappointed, but, you know, I think we're very close-knit at the moment, and there's a real positive feel in the team.
Well, Gatland was talking about disappointments there, and there are some players very disappointed not to make that starting 15. Some controversial choices. Firstly, at prop, Alex Corbisiero chosen at prop ahead of his England teammate Maku Vunipola. That was a surprise. Corbisiero has made just one start on tour so far, and he wasn't part of the original touring party, only called up after an injury to Kean Healy. Elsewhere, Tom Youngs was given the nod ahead of Richard Hibbard at hooker, and prized places in the back row given to Jamie Heaslip and Tom Croft. Sam Warburton will lead the side. He's one of eight Welshmen in that starting 15. And Jake Robson alongside me. It should be a fascinating clash between these two sides. The Lions have suffered a defeat on tour against the Brumbies. That's a disappointment for them, but that won't have much of a bearing on this match, will it?
Personally, I don't think so. I think that if you look at who was actually playing for the Lions when they lost the other day, it was almost their third string team. They rested most of the big players for this game. They had various last minute call ups, Christian Wade being one of them. It might have been the kick up the backside they needed, just a sort of quick reality check for the squad. But I mean, as far as this starting 15 for Saturday's game, it's a completely different side, and, you know, clearly the best side possible that they could put out.
Well, some big boosts injury-wise for the Lions ahead of this match. George North has been struggling with a hamstring problem, but he's been past fit for the match, so he will pose half of a double Welsh threat out wide. George North on one wing, and, of course, Alex Cuthbert on the other. Lee Halfpenny given the nod at fullback. Interesting that Tom Croft got the nod in the back row, the suggestion being that his extra height at the line-out could be key because they've struggled in that area. And, of course, Jamie Heaslip given the nod ahead of Toby Faletau in that back row alongside Sam Warburton. And Alex Corbisiero, the suggestion from Warren Gatland was he was picked ahead of Maku Vunipola for his scrummaging ability. Obviously, Vunipola, a better player in the loose, but in terms of scrummaging, Corbisiero gets the nod. Well, we'll move our attentions to cricket now, and the Champions Trophy final will take place at Edgbaston on Sunday. England taking on India. England are looking to win a global 50-over tournament for the first time. India, of course, recent World Cup winners, and certainly have played well throughout the tournament. Both had good wins in their semi-finals. England saw off South Africa by 7 wickets, bowled exceptionally well. And that was a good win against South Africa. And as for India, they crushed Sri Lanka by 8 wickets. They restricted them to just 181 for 8 off their 50 overs. India have looked very impressive all the way through, haven't they, really, Jake?
They have looked very impressive. But I think you can definitely see why England were, at one stage before the tournament started, the favourites to win. Because, I mean, you saw the other day in that victory over South Africa, they pulled them apart. I know South Africa were missing sort of 2 of their key batsmen and 2 of their key bowlers, but England's bowlers just, I mean...
Yeah, you're right. The conditions were perfect, weren't they? Because it was a muggy day. The ball was nipping around. Jimmy Anderson, I thought, bowled terrifically well. Such a dangerous bowler. Stuart Broad has bowled well. And also, Graham Swann, of course, has had all the injury problems, but it hasn't been a problem because James Treadwell's come in and he makes things happen. He's not just a containment bowler. He's not just somebody who'll keep the score down. He takes wickets, and that's what he's been doing and putting that extra pressure on. And when England had that, you know, relatively small target to knock off, despite losing Alistair Cook early on, Joe Root, who looks a terrifically mature player for his age, put on a really good century stand with Jonathan Trott, and they made it happen. The worry I have over England against India, I guess, is that if England are chasing a target, my worry is that they don't get ahead of the rate. They try and hold wickets in reserve and go for a big bash towards the end. Against India, I'm not sure you can get away with that. So there is pressure on England, but they've done very well to get this far, no question about that. They've bowled well. They've, by and large, batted well. Alistair Cook, again, showing that he can play 50-over cricket at this level, that he can be a destructive batsman when he wants to be. Jonathan Trott gets a lot of stick, but I think, you know, a guy that averages over 50 in one-day cricket and at test level, you can't argue with that, really. So England have the weapons, but India, very, very strong at the top of the order. Dhawan has been a revelation. Amazing that at 27, he's only now being recognised at international level. He looks a terrific player at the top of the order. They've got an energy about them that you don't always see with India. It's the best Indian fielding side I've seen for a long time. Let's catch up with the Indian captain, Mahendra Singh Dhoni. He's been speaking ahead of the match. He feels it will be a pretty tight encounter.
When it comes to Champions Trophy, you know, the top 8 teams participate, which means all of them are strong enough to, you know, beat anyone on that particular day and win the trophy. So I think England, they are a very good side. We have played quite often in the last couple of years, so I think, you know, we know the same amount, you know, when it comes to knowledge and tactics.
So he thinks it'll be pretty tight. Certainly the Indian bowling attack is a lot more varied than it used to be. So Dhoni thinks it'll be close. What do you think, Jake?
I also think it'll be close. I think it depends, a lot depends on the conditions on the day, certainly relating to the weather and therefore the toss. I mean, if it's a cloudy day, humid day, and England win the toss and bowl first, you saw what happened in the South Africa game, then England will be favourites. I mean, going into it, India, I think, are definitely favourites. He's obviously going to play down their chances, isn't he?
Well, I have to say, heart says England, but head probably says India. I think they'll probably just about come out on top. But we hope, from an English point of view, that that's not the case. Football now, and what a strange few days it's been at St James's Park. Joe Kinnear, drafted in as director of football. That was a real bolt from the blue. And Derek Lambias has since stepped down as managing director of the club. Kinnear gave a very strange interview on radio in which he announced that he'd signed various Newcastle players when he'd been manager previously. And that wasn't the case. They'd already been at the club. He said he'd signed Tim Krul. He was already there. All kinds of factual inaccuracies in that interview, and also a really aggressive nature. And equally strange that Joe Kinnear was talking about the fact he'd been appointed for 2 days before the club actually confirmed it. Alan Pardew, the manager, surely put under pressure by this move. It's absolutely bonkers. They slip from 5th to 16th, and that looks like a massive, you know, tailing off of results. But in truth, they had a catastrophic list of injuries. They got to the quarterfinals of the Europa League, which stretched the squad still further. They lost their best player, Demba Ba, to Chelsea in January. So that's a big blow. There was nothing they could do about that because he had a £7 million release clause. So there were mitigating factors, and there was certainly no reason to throw a Joe Kinnear-shaped grenade into the pot. It's absurd. And you have a situation where Graham Carr has been working really, really hard behind the scenes, identifying targets, bringing guys in. Nobody can question his record in terms of signings. I thought they made some good signings in January. Moussa Sissoko is a good player. Mapu Yanga and Biwa, I think, will be a very, very good defender in the Premier League once he gets used to the pace of it. And so that was progressing well. Douglas, they'd identified a Brazilian defender at FC Twente, who I think is an excellent player. The rumours are they've pulled out of that deal now because Joe Kinnear's got involved and doesn't know enough about him. Now, we don't know that that's definitely the case, but if it is, that's a worrying sign for me. What it comes down to is, does Joe Kinnear know more about players than Graham Carr? For me, completely no. He's out of touch. He's been a manager for 6 months out of the last 9 years. Does he have an extensive network of European contacts? No, no way. Well, now let's focus on tennis. And of course, the Wimbledon Championships are on the horizon. And the draw's been made for the first round. Andy Murray has been given a kinder draw than he could have. And with details of that, I've got our tennis editor, Johnny Hart, with me. And Johnny, he could have had Nadal, then Federer, then Djokovic, but it's not quite as bad as that, is it?
It's not quite as bad. Let's not get carried away, though, because it's still a very, very tough draw. If things pan out the way we think they will, then Federer would play Rafa Nadal in the quarterfinal. Tsonga would play Murray. We'll talk about the other side of the draw in a minute. And then the winners of those two matches would meet in the semi-final. So on paper, we'd think it's probably Murray, I'd say, against Nadal rather than Federer, because I think Federer's had his best days, even though he is the reigning champion. I always felt, really, with that final last year in 2012, that Murray lost that match rather than Federer won it. So I think that he's got Federer now in his sights, and if he actually has to play him in the semi-final, then all well and good. Nadal, I wouldn't quite fancy as much. The other side of the draw, well, Djokovic has got, it's plain sailing all the way through the draw. But having said that, we never know. Ferrer in the semi-final is his worst. I think Burdick in the quarter-final. So the money is now going to be on Djokovic. I'm sure his price has shortened. He's very much the favourite to win this title. But when you look at this, it's the most mouth-watering Wimbledon I can remember for many, many years, even though some of these players, like Federer, like Nadal, who's been injured, Murray, we know, has also been carrying an injury as well. Djokovic has possibly even hit his peak. We'll wait and see.
There's a bold statement.
Yeah, I mean, he looked unbeatable a few months ago. Now, it's a tiring game and you can't keep up the emphasis all the time, but when you look at that draw, it really is tantalizing, isn't it? And I wouldn't be surprised, though, Kev, if one of these players gets knocked out even before a quarter final.
Well, interestingly enough, you mentioned Murray could get Tsonga in the quarter final. That's not easy, of course, because Tsonga, on grass is a real danger, and he's so unpredictable. If he turns up with his A game, then he can beat anyone.
Well, again, I think Tsonga had a great chance of beating Murray in last year's semi-final, and he just blew it, didn't he, really, in the end. I think the crowd and everything else was on Murray's side that day, just for a change for a British player. I remember that wonderful moment when Murray reached the final, the first since 1938 for a Briton, and Tsonga, being Tsonga, was laughing at the situation, because I think there was a dodgy line call on match point, and they were waiting for the review, and eventually Murray won the game, and Tsonga delightfully was chatting and laughing with Murray. That's a good memory, and it would be great to see the two of them back on court in the quarterfinal, should it go that way. I'm going to bet that Federer doesn't get to the quarterfinal and that Nadal plays somebody else. At the moment, it looks to me like Djokovic against Murray, but that's not exactly much of a prediction, because that's number one against number two. But that would be a wonderful final, wouldn't it?
Other British guys in the draw then. James Ward will be up against Yensun Liu, and Kyle Edmund, who's a rising star, he'll be up against Jerzy Janowicz. Let's move on to the ladies' singles then, and tough draws for both Laura Robson and Heather Watson.
Unfortunately, yeah. I'm sure we could have worked out something with the All England Club to make it a little bit easier, don't you? But perhaps not on this occasion.
Would be nice, wouldn't it?
Laura Robson is going to be up against the number 10 seed, Maria Kirilenko, a very useful player. And even Heather Watson, she's up against Madison Keys, who's only 18. She's from America, and she's one of these rising stars, very much like Heather. So I'm not saying that neither of those British women can win those matches. In fact, I think Laura could beat Kirilenko. But out of the three main ladies that play for Britain, Elena Baltacha against Flavia Panetta, she's the most likely to get through to round two. Baltacha is showing some decent form at the moment. We've got Tara Moore, Anki Odafong, and Samantha Murray also in action. But looking at that, I don't think we're going to see, apart from Murray, more than one or possibly two players from Britain in the second round. It would be a great shame. Ideally, we want to have Laura, Heather, and Elena, and maybe one other.
Well, Baltacha, of course, just won her first tournament for quite a while, didn't she, in Nottingham? So at least a bit of momentum opening it out.
But she seems to have been around for years, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, it's just so many injury problems. But every time it's looked as though she's got some momentum, she's just fallen back.
Or illness.
Either with illness as well, yeah. Let's just broaden it out then to the lady singles in general. It's tough to see beyond Serena Williams, isn't it?
Yeah, she's on this career best winning streak of 31 matches. And she's on course to win a sixth singles title. She's the overwhelming favourite. It's amazing when you think about her sister, I think, has won four or five.
She's won five, yeah. She's
so
won five.
Serena would beat her sister, and they have 11 between them.
And then added all the doubles titles they've
astonishing.
Won between them as well, yeah.
Second seed, Azarenka. Don't think she's going to win it. I'd love to think that Maria Sharapova might stand a chance, but it's got to be Serena.
I suppose with Sharapova, her record against Williams is so bad that you would think that if she comes up against her at any stage, including the final, she'd find it tough.
You just want Serena to have a, sorry to interrupt,
a test.
An off day. You really want her to have an off day. Occasionally she has them, but usually when she's playing on one leg or something.
Yeah, that's what it might need to be. Well, okay, let's move on then to racing. It's been Royal Ascot this week. And with a look ahead to the final day of racing there, here's Charlie Owens.
Thanks, Kevin. We'll look ahead to the final day of Royal Ascot, the Saturday, where the feature race is the Diamond Jubilee Stakes, a Group 1 race over 6 furlongs. And despite the race being contested by as many as 18 runners, the horse I'm going to isolate and concentrate on here is Society Rock. Now, he's just had the one run this season. That's when winning a Group 2 at York back in May. But he has run in this race 3 times already. First time he finished second, the next year he finished first, and last time he finished fifth behind one of the best mares in the Southern Hemisphere, Black Caviar. And in that race he was so badly hampered that he actually deserves credit, great credit indeed, for finishing fifth, where he stayed on really stoutly when the gaps opened. Well, on Saturday's race there is nothing of the ilk of Black Caviar, and if Society Rock can run up to the same sort of level as he has done in the last 3 occasions... then I think he'll take all the beating. Should be around about the 5-6-1 mark. Now, the big betting race of the final day is the Wokingham at 4.25. It's a 6 furlong cavalry charge, 29 go to post, and the likely favourite is Duke of Frenzy. He won the 5 furlong dash at Epsom on Derby Day, but judging by how strongly he finished that race, the extra furlong of the Wokingham will be well to his advantage. I think he's a bit short at around the 6-1 mark, and I'm more tempted by a horse called Rex Imperato, who was second over 7 furlongs at Doncaster in early June, and he'll definitely be seen to his best, dropping back to 6 furlongs. He's trained by William Haggis, who's a man very adept at placing horses in handicaps, and he'll be ridden by Neil Callan, the thorough professional, always gives his horse every chance in the big races. So that'll be my nap for Royal Ascot, Rex Imperato, at around about 12-1 each way.
Well, that's it for this week from myself, Kevin Hatchard, Jake Robson, Charlie Owens, and Johnny Hart. It's goodbye for now.